Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the one and only Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. Big news today. See, a dead news week, and I have the biggest news of the year in the media. Now, the biggest news of the year is that Michael Savage has now joined the leagues of Ronald Reagan, Theodore Roosevelt, Henry Kissinger, and others. In that, I've been invited to debate at the Cambridge Union in Cambridge, England. Very interesting, isn't it? Michael Savage invited to Cambridge, England on Thursday, October 15, 2009? How is that possible? They say you could either address the Cambridge Debating Society via a live video link, or pending any revisions of your legal status, you could be here in person. You can see it on michaelsavage.com, the actual invitation, if you think I'm making it up. Or you could see the headline on The Drudge Report, banned talker Michael Savage invited to debate political correctness at Cambridge Union, event slated for October 15th, developing. That's right above Ben and Jerry's new flavors, Hubby Hubby. So I'm a banned talker, and they've invited me to debate political correctness. And the debate will be entitled, quote, "This House believes political correctness is sane and necessary, and we would be delighted if you were available to speak in opposition to the motion." So I'm to argue against political correctness, which I don't think is too difficult. In fact, I think I can summarize my opinions quite directly, which is that if you want a sane society that's non-controversial, where everyone agrees with each other, meaning a politically correct society, you need look no further than North Korea or Cuba for such societies. Of course, you know, if you disagree in Cuba, you are shot or put away in prison camps. You don't see that on ABC, CBS, NBC, or CNN, because they want you to believe that Fidel Castro's healthcare system is superior, as is his social system. Now, I am the only talk show host so honored to have been invited to the Cambridge Union Society. This is a second great honor that's come to me. The first was the profile in The New Yorker. And yet, even though I'm the only talk show host so honored and not permitted to defend himself on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and even Fox News, you have to ask yourself, why not on Fox? How is that possible? I mean, you would think that if they have prostitutes, perverts, pimps, all sorts of strange weirdos on Fox News on a regular basis, they'd at least be interested in a conservative talk show host named Michael Savage to come on the air and say, hey, that's great. You're banned in England, and yet the Cambridge Union Society wants you to come there and debate. That's big news. That's what you would think if you lived in a free society. But my friends, beware the government media complex is a speech I gave in 1997 before the Commonwealth Club. And I will tell you once again that all of the media, that includes ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox, are really part of the same coin, the government media complex. They're all one coin. With the exception of the internet and a few independently syndicated radio shows, the media landscape, frankly, is in lockdown. So I'm going to ask you two questions today on the Savage Nation. This is a huge honor, and I'm going to read you the letter in a few minutes. Remember what I'm talking about. The corrupt Gordon Brown, the same man who apparently released the Lockerbie bomber, the same man who wanted Michael Savage put on the list of banned individuals because his speech was apparently too threatening to the communist, liberal, socialist government of the Labor Party of Gordon Brown. The very same Labor government that released the Lockerbie bomber has built a wall up around their own nation against Michael Savage. Now, the liberals used to say, tear down that wall. Liberals tell Israel, tear down the wall. How come the liberals in America aren't screaming at Gordon Brown, tear down the wall and let Michael Savage in? Well, you wouldn't expect that from most liberals because they're hypocrites, but you'd expect it from those who wrap themselves in the flag of conservatism, wouldn't you? The crybaby, the hemorrhoid king. Wouldn't you expect that from them? But you're not going to get it from them. You're going to have to get it on your own from me. And instead of talking about the others, I'm going to ask you two questions. One, should I accept this invitation to debate in London on Thursday, October 15th, and defend my positions in essence? They're going to say political correctness is sane and necessary. They want me to speak in opposition of the motion. In other words, they'll say, we contend that political correctness is sane and necessary for an orderly society. Then I will say it is not, and you need look no further than North Korea or Cuba for an example of where this leads. After all, Hitler had a politically correct society. Anyone who disagreed with Adolf Hitler was rounded up by the Gestapo after being pointed out by their liberal neighbors, because you know Hitler was a socialist. I have to keep repeating it until you get it through your stupid heads. Socialism is in vogue now because we have a socialist president surrounded by very, very dangerous, evil people in the White House. Very dangerous street thugs who espouse socialism. Right inside the doors of the White House, the enemy within is there. They're all espousing the end of capitalism and the ascent of socialism. Well, let me remind you that Adolf Hitler ran a party called the National Socialist Party, Nazi. Hitler was a socialist. He wanted everyone to be equal, and he made everyone equal, except those who were not of the same race and those who disapproved of him. They were rounded up by the Gestapo and put into prison camps, and after that, there was a sane and orderly society that was politically correct. Everyone agreed that Hitler was a good man in Germany. If they didn't, they were rounded up. Cuba, as you know, is a hellhole. Cuba is a totalitarian regime. Cuba, from the beginning, Che Guevara was a mass murderer who shot all of his political enemies. Fidel and Raul Castro are gangsters who round up and kill anybody who argues with them or put them away in prison camps. And yet here in America, you have communists and socialists telling you that Cuba is a wonderful free place to go. Well, that would be some of the points I'd like to make, which is that, no, political correctness is not sane and necessary, my English friends. You need look no further than North Korea or Cuba to see that. The next question I will ask you on the Savage Nation is this, and this is for those of you who can reason. If I do accept this debate by video link, because I'm not permitted in England, what questions do you think the Cameron Union Society will throw at me? How will they pose questions to trap me? And so you can help me do my homework by getting me ready for this debate by thinking about, you're in the Cambridge Union, you're a liberal, you're inviting a conservative who is banned from your nation, and the topic is political correctness is sane and necessary. He takes the opposite position, meaning myself. What would you say to me to trip me up? What questions would you throw at me? Now, I want to remind you who the Cambridge Union Society, who they really are. I don't think you understand who they are. I don't think you understand how important they are. The Cambridge Union was founded in 1815 and is the world's oldest debating society, because England has always been, well, since the Magna Carta, the freest nation on earth until what happened to them recently, 1815. And they write, we have enjoyed the presence of many high-profile speakers, including American presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt, and Nobel Prize winner Henry Kissinger. So here you have an embarrassment for the illegitimate left in America. Michael Savage, conservative, joining the ranks of Theodore Roosevelt, Henry Kissinger, Ronald Reagan, and others, invited to the Cambridge Union, banned by Fox News. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So as you know, this country is moving closer and closer to an absolute dictatorship under the Obamaites, where they are controlling your language, they're controlling your speech, they're controlling what you can see. They want to control the internet. An article came out today that you should really be shocked about. The White House wants to capture and archive citizens' comments about the White House on its Facebook, YouTube, MySpace sites. That's a dictatorship. Obama is a clear and present danger to your freedom, in my opinion. And if he's not constrained by a separation of powers, you're going to wind up with a fascist dictatorship in this country. That's how I see it. Now, I realize this is shocking to many of you out there who don't really understand the danger you're in. But we're talking about another arm of this danger, which is how you got here. And that is through political correctness. They controlled you with language. They told you what you couldn't say, what you could say, what you couldn't think even. And they said you have to be civil and you have to be polite. And you have to be tolerant. You have to suspend all your judgment. They're going to tell you what to say and how to say it to very sensitive individuals. Now, as you well know, this leads to tyranny. And the Cambridge Union knows that I've been banned from Britain by this corrupt, weaselly dictator, Gordon Brown, who's about to be thrown out on his keister because of this latest scandal of releasing a Lockerbie bomber. And the Cambridge Union actually invited me in July. I really just got the letter today, but it was sent in July. I don't know how it took so long. And they said the Cambridge Union has been following you with great interest in recent weeks. And they've invited me to debate on Thursday, October 15th, which is a great honor. Reagan, Roosevelt, and Henry Kissinger, amongst others, have been invited. You haven't been invited, have you? You in your pajamas over there. You cyberbully sitting in pajamas, drooling on yourself. You haven't been invited, but you want to attack me. You're going to make nothing of this, too? You're going to make nothing of all my achievements, you think, because you sit there and fire off an email to your schmuck friends? You're nothing. No one ever heard of you. You're nothing but cyberbullies. And that goes for those of you on the right as well. You're a bunch of phonies. You try to tyrannize anybody who doesn't toe your line. Well, you're not going to tyrannize me. That goes to you on the right as well as the left. I see the crappy emails you send out. You think because you sit there in your pajamas and send out a drooling email that somebody knows who you are? The hell with you. The hell with you. And that goes to all of you at Fox News. Shame on all of you. Because when this is all over and history judges that I was unfairly treated, you will have been on the wrong side of history. All of you on Fox News. All of you self-righteous phonies. All of you who wear crosses and make believe you're so great. Because you're not a liberal. You are a liberal. You're no different than any of them. Because you're listening to that bigot over there who tells you not to have Michael Savage on. Shame on you. Of all of them, Fox News is the worst. I'd expect this from Wolf Blitzer and the cohorts at CNN. I'd expect it from Katie Couran. But I wouldn't expect it from Fox News, which poses as a conservative organization, and yet they ban Michael Savage. How do they differ from Gordon Brown? What have I said that's so frightening to Rupert Murdoch's minions? Well, add it up, government media complex. And I want to tell you something else. Because of you, this is all happening. Because of my audience, which is so powerful, the Cambridge Union has invited me to debate. It's a great honor. History will judge that I am the most honored talk show host in American history. I'll say that right now. History will judge that Michael Savage is the most honored talk show host in American history. There's nobody who can come near me. I am the king of talk radio in the United States of America, if not the world. If you didn't know it from the New Yorker article, then you'll know it from the Cambridge Union. And the reason I'm telling you is because if I don't tell you, nobody will tell you. The fact is, it's the truth. And the fact is, history will judge me as such. And I want to remind you of something else. My book, Banned in Britain, was not touched by one New York publisher. They allegedly publish conservative authors, but they won't publish Michael Savage. I have four bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers, and they won't touch me? Why is that? What are they so afraid of? Who do they answer to? They take lesser people, illiterate lesser people who copy books from Thomas Paine and put their name on it with quotes around it, and they call that a book? So I published Banned in Britain myself. I'm telling you right now, this is your only opportunity to own a classic first edition of Banned in Britain. You can only buy it on michaelsavage.com, okay? And I suggest you do it now. Now, having said that, I want to go to you again. Should I accept this honor? I mean, it is an honor, but it's a risky honor, isn't it? Let's start with Jeremy in New York on WOR. Jeremy, should I accept this offer or not? Go ahead, please.
Why are you running our precious radio time with this English crap?
Jeremy, I'm sorry, what?
Why are you ruining our time? You're worse boring than
Jeremy, can you speak in English? You're using a fake voice. No one knows what you're saying except your mother. Can you please use a real voice? I'm sure he hung up. He was a liberal. That's all. Salt Lake City, Alan, go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, first-time caller, long-time listener. You betcha. You get on that debate. You don't have to be coached on this. I've been listening to you for years. You have the intellectual firepower. You have the historical resource base all wrapped up in that mind of yours. You will have no problem. And in respect to the invitation, I can't think of a more prestigious honor being offered. I'm from a British Commonwealth country myself.
Are you from Australia?
I'm a New Zealander, Michael. I've lived.
I was close, Alan. I spent a lot of time in Fiji. I almost got it right.
Aussie's that little offshore island from New Zealand.
You know? No, I don't mean to diminish New Zealanders. They're great people. Everyone I met, I've always really enjoyed the interaction. And I have a soft spot for New Zealanders and Australians as well because of their heroics in World War II and how many young men died so that I could be free to speak in this country. But isn't it ironic that although your ancestors fought for the freedom of speech, that Gordon Brown would deny it to me?
Well, Gordon Brown is a socialist. He's on record, Michael, as having said, and you'll have to excuse me, I can't cite it quite at the moment, but Gordon Brown, his dream was to have a socialist government entirely for Scotland, but he's moved further down. And
because he released the Lockerbie bomber, this seems to be the last straw for the British people, don't you think?
Well, I wrote to the Cambridge Union today and expressed my gratitude that you'd been asked to debate, and I pointed out to them rather cryptically to have you invited is a hell of a lot better than what their Scottish cousins further north did with the, of course, drawing reference to the Lockerbie.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Alan. I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. Again today, I'm going to be giving this book out. I want it widely circulated. I don't take that many callers. Whoever does get on the show will get a free copy of Banned in Britain. It is going to be a collector's item. And yes, I do want people to read it. Yes, I do. And I want you to read it as well. So stay on the line. Free copy goes out to you.
Savage.
God save the queen. The fascist regime. It made you a moron. Potential hate.
It is the Savage Nation, and to think I was going to take this week off. I just had an instinct that this week would be big. I knew it. Every time the media is away, something big happens. Now, I want to say something else. Many of you are saying, well, why are you talking about yourself and England and being banned in Britain so much? Why don't you move on to health care and whatnot? Well, I do that once in a while, but truthfully, there are two reasons I am talking about this. Number one, it's because it's important that I defend myself and free my name from this list. It's a very dangerous thing to permit my name to sit out there this long with real murderers and terrorists. And two, I believe it's the most important story in the American media. Now, you say, how could that be? Because it's about an American commentator who has been banned from a Western democracy for statements he allegedly made that he didn't make. That's number one. Can't you understand the magnitude of this problem? How in the world could you be so, let us say, the word I'm looking for is, how could you be so petty as to think that the core of our society, by the way, is freedom of speech? It's the core of it. If they take away freedom of speech, they can take away all the other freedoms. Don't you understand the only thing you've got is the ability to stand up and say no? What do you think that the town hall meetings are all about? It was people saying no to Obama. Now, you take away the First Amendment, there goes the Second, Third, Fourth, Fifth, and whatever other amendments they want to take away from you, because there'll be nobody to object. There will be no dissent. And so, therefore, my friends, this great honor of Michael Savage being invited to speak before the Cambridge Union and to speak against political correctness, which, as you know, is the precursor to fascism. It does not matter whether the fascism comes from the left or from the right. Fascism is fascism is fascism. And I will remind you again, again and again that our First Amendment was written not to protect polite speech. Our First Amendment was written to defend objectionable speech. You don't need a First Amendment to protect polite speech, do you? No, you need a First Amendment to protect my speech, my offensive speech. It is offensive only to those who disagree with me. Just as Obama now wants to cull and record and capture and archive citizens' comments on the White House Facebook, YouTube, and MySpace sites. Why would they want to do that? Why have they looked out for a contractor to capture and preserve and collect comments made by common citizens on social networking sites? Why would he do it unless he was a dictator in the making? Why? If you can't put two and two together yet, you're a dummy. That's all. So the question is, number one, should I accept this invitation? Because it's still questionable. And two, what traps do you think they will lay for me about political correctness? How will they present it where they try to make me into a gang member, a bad guy? Why? Why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, I know some of the arguments they're going to use. They're going to say that when gender-based or racial epithets intimidate and silence and drive their victims from the arena of academic freedom, then this discourse cannot be defended as free speech. But what about when conservative views are driven from the arena of freedom of speech? What about the fact that conservative views have been driven from universities? What about that? The fact that conservative views have been driven from the San Francisco newspapers, the Los Angeles newspapers, the New York newspapers. What about that? How does that play out in a politically correct society? Is that freedom? Of course it isn't. Now you understand what was behind this gender-based racial thing. It was all about grabbing power. It's always about grabbing power. So I know how to defend freedom of speech because I'm actually now at the point of the spear. And it came down upon me. And believe me, I'd like to walk away from this sometimes. Some days I wake up and I say, I really don't need this. I don't want to do it anymore. Thanks to you, number one, my legal defense fund is flush with money. If I need to pursue it, I can take it to the end of the earth because you have donated money. Don't underestimate the power of money. The contributions have given me the power to fight the whole government of England if I need to. Number two, in the court of public opinion, I have won already in England. And number three, by you buying banned in Britain, you're helping me, you're helping free speech, and you're helping yourself because you're going to own a collector's edition. I am telling you that I will be remembered as the most prominent talk radio host in American history. Nobody before me has achieved what I have achieved, and nobody after me is likely to do so either. Sometimes when you're living through a storm like this, you don't even know what you're living through. Now, God did this to me because I believe that God is involved in all of this. The hand of God is all over this. And although this trial has not been easy thus far, I have not quit, have I? I haven't pulled the covers over my head, not gotten up one morning and said I can't take it anymore, because I am like a street weed. And the tougher they are with me, the more I'll grow. I really will fight this to the end because I know I'm right. And just as David was right and Goliath was wrong, just as when a big guy picks on a little guy, the little guy will always win because the little guy is usually right and the big guy is a bully. And I'm being bullied by a whole government, and I'm not walking away so fast. Remember, Jackie Smith, who did this to me, was fired because she became an embarrassment to Gordon Brown. She's gone, isn't she? So she was the first victim of their own campaign against freedom. In other words, she was hung by her own petard. Now you got Gordon Brown himself. The emails that I disclose in Banned in Britain show clearly that his minions said, yes, we should put Savage on the list because the PM and the foreign minister both want him on the list. He personally put me on this list. I appealed to him in a full-page letter last July or June, I don't know, in a British newspaper. I appealed to him to remove my name from that list. He would not do so. Instead, he released a Lockerbie bomber to go home to a hero's welcome, a man who killed or engineered the killing of over 250 people. But a man who simply expressed conservative viewpoints, including borders, language, and culture, is so offensive that he's not permitted into a nation? You don't find that shocking? You don't find that offensive? You don't find that frightening? You don't find that chilling? How can a liberal not even understand this? So I ask you, should I go, and what will they entrap me with? San Diego Jeff, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, it's an invitation. I mean, first of all, let me say it is an honor that the Cambridge Union invited you, and I'm not trying to take that away from you, but it's not a green light invitation. It comes with conditions. I think it's a joke, and I think it reeks of somebody higher up trying to appease you by saying, "Why don't we invite him via webcast?" I think it's an almost an insult that they're inviting you under these conditions. You shouldn't. The point is, they're listening to you for one. And
well, hold on. Let me read you the letter so that you know what they said. Hold on a minute. The debate will take place in Cambridge on Thursday, 15th October, 2009. You could either address the society by live video link or, pending any revisions of your legal status, in person.
Pending any revisions of your legal status, meaning that we're going to throw that in as if we're actually going to do anything about your legal status.
Well, I understand your skepticism. You don't trust them any more than I trust the American media. But remember, we went through this when the New Yorker author, remember, I didn't mention his name of the publication. I said a major league publication wants to come out and interview me, and we debated whether I should accept, and most of you said don't. They're going to set you up. Remember that?
Yes.
I don't know if you were listening at that time, but eventually I decided to accept that invitation, that offer from the New Yorker, because I felt that the author, having been a music critic for 7 years, was an open-minded individual. And I was right, wasn't I? He did a fairly good article about me. In fact, it's so good that the illegitimate left vermin scum from hell are now attacking the New Yorker for not attacking me, to show you how tolerant they are, these politically correct vermin. Don't get me started on political correctness. They're all Nazis, every one of them. And I will remind you that Hitler had a politically correct society. Kim Jong-il has a politically correct society. Fidel and Raul Castro have a politically correct society right now. Shall I go down the list? You want to live in such a society? Well, don't count me in with you, because I'm not going to be there with you. I don't want to live there with you. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Elizabeth, you're up. Go ahead. Should I take it or not?
I think you absolutely have to go. I mean, if you don't, they're going to hold that up like a flag wave and see, we're right to ban him in England and he's afraid to defend himself. Yeah, they're going to try to bait you. That's what they're about. But you're an intelligent person. You're a very articulate person. I think you can handle anything.
Well, how are they going to trip me up? What could they possibly say to me to make me look like a fool?
I think they're going to try to throw in that these boneheads in government and some of these top stations are knocking you down or attempting to knock you down, you know, and trying to play you down. But
remember, hold on now. This is a debate. It's not an argument or, you know, kind of a typical interview on television. It's a debating society. Remember what it is. It has rules. So they make a statement and I have to respond to it. Their position is political correctness is sane and necessary. They want me to speak in opposition of that motion.
And they're going to try to say that by being non-politically correct, which I absolutely agree, and you can be polite. You are one of the most polite commentators out there. People just think you're not because they don't like your point of view. But I feel that they're going to go, well, you know, the government doesn't listen to you because, you know, you're not politically correct, and that's where you've got to go, well, yeah, I'm not a sheep.
All right, I hear you. I'm not sure. Oh, I meant to give the young lady a copy of Band of Britain. I'm sorry. Should I go or not go? Yes or no? What will they say to trip me up? I'm asking you, the audience. You're a very intelligent audience. I don't need to ask experts. I'm asking you. You're the experts. My audience is the most educated audience in talk radio. I know that for a fact. We've done analysis of demographics. We know this. So you have the capacity to tell me what you think they're going to throw at me. I don't need an expert to tell me. I pretty much am so fast on my feet that I don't really have to prepare for it at all. It's not like I'm worried about it. I mean, I can go there. You can put 10 of them in front of me. No matter what they say, I'm going to spin them because I can, because they're wrong. There's no defense of political correctness. Do you understand that it's indefensible in a free society? It's defensible in North Korea or Cuba, as I said to you. How can you defend political correctness in a free society? Tell me how. Take the other side. Defend it. Go ahead and take it. Take the other side and defend political correctness, if you will. That would be as interesting as anything. We could do that in the next hour. Go and defend political correctness, if you will. either because you really believe it or because you want to play devil's advocate. There are some pretty smart people out there, lawyers, professors, truck drivers. Usually the truck drivers are smarter than any of them because they have more time on the road with rolling wheels to think through things, you know. So what do you think? Huh? New York City, WOR. Pat, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I think you absolutely have to go to Britain, possibly in person, if possible, to defend yourself and all of us out here who believe in you, because you're like the only light out there in the media.
All right. I hear you. Well, I think I'm going to accept. I mean, I may accept by video link. I'm not allowed to go there. After all, I'm such a dangerous man. Apparently, they let a murderer in there. He's actually a member of parliament. Although he smashed in the head of a 4-year-old Jewish child, the British love him.
Well, this is our.
You know that I'm on a list with a man who killed two parents and then found the child they were hiding in an attic, as was done in Hitler's Germany. And then this member of parliament in Hamas, this Hamas member of parliament, then found their baby that they hid in a crawl space and smashed her head in with a rifle butt. He spent 10 years in an Israeli prison for that. And they put me on a list with that man. Can you imagine this? Can you imagine such a disgraceful thing to do to me, a member of the American media? But what's even more disgraceful is that the members of the American media, such as those on Fox News, and I'm focusing only on them, still refuse to cover this story. What does that tell you about them? It speaks volumes about Fox News, I would think.
Did they lose all credit?
You know, I got to tell you something, a quick story. Last night after the show, it was a hot, beautiful night, so I walked along the waterfront of San Francisco. And I got to tell you, there's a part of the city I didn't even know was there. I mean, I knew it was. I never go there because I'm set in my ways. I went from the ferry terminal all the way down to Alioto's by foot. There, it looks like Pike Street Market now, stores and delis and groceries and bars and clam house. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. And you could walk all around the water. So I stopped at my friend's place. I haven't been there in a while, the waterfront. And I went in for two drinks. First, I wasn't drinking. It's a funny story in a way. I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to drink right after a show. I'm going to take a long walk. But the further I went along the wharf, the more tired I got and the thirstier I got. So by the time I hit the first station of the cross, the waterfront, and my friend who owns it was there, he jumped, Michael, come on in. He said, let me buy you a drink. I said, no, I really shouldn't. I'm taking a long walk. I said, all right, I'll take a drink. Well, one drink led to another, and he said to me, you know, I really respect the fact that you have to defend yourself. I listened to your show. You did a great job. Defend yourself. You're the only one who can do it, so do it. Then I wound up in Alioto's, and I drank some more vodka, and I had a great meal. They understand why I'm defending myself. You don't have to explain it to people who understand what freedom is. Now, what do I mean by that? They understand what freedom is. Let me give you an example. If you let these Obama thugs get away with it, they would seize restaurants that people built through 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years of family hard work, and they would say the state now owns your restaurant. This was done in Cuba. This was done in Cuba. Businesses were seized by the gangster brothers, the Castros, and they were taken away from people who had built businesses up over a 50-year period. They stole sugar plantations. They stole hotels. They stole restaurants, and they said, in the name of the revolution, we're taking your restaurant. And they turned it over to incompetent bureaucrats who could not run the restaurant. The restaurants became shabby. Eventually, they went out of business. Now, if they didn't actually shoot the restaurant owner or put him in a slave labor camp, they let him become a dishwasher in his own restaurant. And if you think I'm making this up, then you're an ignoramus. Then you're a bigger schmuck than even your wife thinks you are. I'll be right back.
Savage. All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost.
You only go around once, okay? Things happen to you in life that you don't plan, whether it's a disease or a death of a relative, or you don't know what's coming. So who would have thought that after 15 years of speaking my mind on radio, that I would be banned by a Western democracy? Sure, I thought it could happen. I'd be banned from Libya. I would have been banned from North Korea, Syria, Cuba. I would have expected that. But would you have ever expected that an American member of the media, no matter how you disagree with them, would have been banned by a Western democracy? It's unheard of. It's unheard of. Well, is it unheard of? No. I'll remind you that Winston Churchill himself was banned from the BBC for many years in the 1930s when he was warning the Brits about the arrival on the stage of Hitler and Hitler building up the military, Hitler building up the Navy, Hitler building ME-109s, and the very same ancestors of these liberal vermin, Gordon Brown, the Labour Party socialist individuals. Their ancestors said Winston Churchill is a dangerous man because he's speaking against Chancellor Hitler. Winston Churchill is a dangerous man because he's a warmonger. Winston Churchill is a dangerous man because he's telling us to remilitarize the British military. Build more guns? No. Make more bullets? No. Build a new fighter plane? No. No, no, that's militaristic, they said about Churchill. So banish him from the BBC, the very same mentality that is trying to kill me, trying to kill you, trying to kill England. The very same mentality that almost killed England in World War II. Do you realize what would have happened had Churchill not stuck with it, the bulldog? They wouldn't have built the Spitfire. There would have been no victory at the Battle of Britain. The Nazis would have broken the back of England, and they would have descended into a thousand years of darkness had the Russians and the Americans not saved their butts. But they would have lost England, is the point. If the liberals of that era had succeeded in banning Winston Churchill entirely, had there been no counter-movement from the conservatives who went ahead and built the Spitfire, who went ahead and built the HMS Hood, despite what the liberal pacifists were saying and doing, there would be no England. It would have disappeared. And now you see England in such bad shape. You see an England that's afraid of its own shadow. You see an England that took down the Union Jack in order to appease the radical Muslims. You see an England where the churches are emptying out, where the people don't worship God anymore. They fear God. They spit at God. What fear God? They laugh at God, and you see their girls, the flower of England, laying in the gutter with their legs spread open, drunk at night. That's the England of today. Why? Because they killed God off. They killed God with political correctness.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You know, when I entered radio in 1994, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Well, I don't know if I really didn't have any idea, because the first night I did radio, I swore I'd never do radio again. I encountered the bigotry of the liberals of the Bay Area when I filled in for an overnight host, and I simply expressed my opinions on the dangers of affirmative action, the dangers of political correctness and such. The hatred that came back at me from the bigots called liberals was so overwhelming, I decided I would never do radio again. However, the station then made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and the rest is history, and I'm here 15 years later. But little did I think that in the year 2009, on the 5th of May, I would be shocked with the reading of the Drudge Report that I was banned from entering the United Kingdom along with murderers and terrorists. I said, this can't be true. It's impossible. Well, here it is true, and here it is months later, and the corrupt Gordon Brown government, the same government that released the Lockerbie bomber to a hero's welcome in Libya, the same corrupt government that put me on a list refuses to take me off the list. Of course, he doesn't represent all of England. In fact, he probably represents 20, 25% of the people of England. Most of the English people don't approve of his government. They're going to throw him out at the latest next May, and there will be a conservative government in England, no doubt. And I'm hopeful that if it takes that long, I will then have my honor restored and my name restored. Of course, the dishonor here goes to Jackie Smith. The dishonor goes to Gordon Brown. The dishonor goes to liberalism in general for having fallen to this level. However, I also didn't think that I would have the distinct honor of being invited to present my viewpoint by the Cambridge Union Society in Cambridge, England. The Cambridge Union was founded in 1815 and is the world's oldest debating society. Now, those of you who love talk radio should understand what this means. Okay, now you're used to people in talk radio, some of whom are very glib and some of whom express opinions that you agree with, and yet they don't have the first idea what debating really is. I do. So the Cambridge Union wrote me a letter. They say the following. The Cambridge Union has been following you with great interest in recent weeks. We understand that you are fighting to overturn a ban on entering the UK imposed by the Home Office and former Home Secretary Jackie Smith. The decision to ban you has caused quite a stir, and we are keen to know how your situation progresses, especially now that Jackie Smith has resigned from Cabinet. The Cambridge Union was founded in 1815. I'm reading a letter now from them. The Cambridge Union was founded in 1815 and is the world's oldest debating society. We have enjoyed the presence of many high-profile speakers, including American presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt, and Nobel Peace Prize winner Henry Kissinger. We understand that your radio show, The Savage Nation, is the third most popular show in America, and although controversial, we think that you are more qualified than anyone to talk about the subject of political correctness in America and Britain. We write to invite you to speak at a debate on the subject of political correctness at the Cambridge Union Society. The debate will be entitled, This House Believes Political Correctness is Sane and Necessary, and we would be delighted if you, Michael Savage, were available to speak in opposition of the motion. The debate will take place in Cambridge on Thursday, 15th October, 09. You could either address the society by live video link or, pending any revisions of your legal status, in person. We look forward to receiving your reply. Best wishes, J.D. and J.L. The letter is up on michaelsavage.com. The question to you, the audience of the Savage Nation, there are two questions, rather. One, should I accept this offer? Because I know there are pitfalls. And two, should I accept it? How will they defend political correctness in order to make me look bad? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. The letter is up on michaelsavage.com. And I want to remind you, you still have an opportunity to own the classic first edition of Banned in Britain, available at this time only on my website, because the New York publishing houses will not publish this book. They have also banned me on Publishers Row. I have been banned by Fox News, CNN, ABC, CBS, and NBC. They will talk to rapists, murderers, ball players, pigeon raisers, pinheads, macrocephalics, microcephalics, but they will not talk to a man who has been banned by a Western democracy. What does that tell you about Fox News? That's a separate story. The main question to you is the one I raised. Now, a partial list of past speakers at the Cambridge Union Society contains some very distinguished people, but not some. Also, some not very distinguished people. I'll read you a partial list. Here are the people who have spoken there. They said that Reagan, Theodore Roosevelt, and Henry Kissinger spoke there, but they didn't add the following. Australian Prime Minister John Howard, good guy. U.S. President Ronald Reagan, great man. German Chancellor Helmut Kohl. South African President F.W. de Klerk spoke there. Archbishop Desmond Tutu, King Hussein of Jordan, Dalai Lama. The French politician Jean-Marie Le Pen, who you know is a right-winger. Libyan President Gaddafi spoke before the Cambridge Union. Clint Eastwood spoke. Winston Churchill. UK Prime Minister Clement Attlee. Indian Prime Minister Jawaharlal Nehru. And, of course, U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt. In either case, it is a very distinguished list. And I doubt that there is a person listening to this audience that is not, let us say, who's an attorney, liberal or otherwise, who wouldn't accept this honor. But should I? And should I accept this honor, what will they throw at me in order to try to trip me up? So I turn it over to you, the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. What I'd like to know is, how can anyone defend political correctness? I'd like to know how anyone can defend it. It's indefensible. It's the opposite of political freedom. It's the opposite of freedom of speech. It's controlling language. What it boils down to is telling people you cannot say this, you cannot say that, because it offends certain people. And I remind you again that speech that does not call for violence may be offensive, but it should never be illegal. We never would have had an American Revolution without freedom of speech, would we? Brits try to control the colonists in many different ways. Freedom of speech is the essence of all of Western democracy, the core of it. Without it, my friends, there would be no freedom at all. The Second Amendment would be gone next. And that's if you didn't have the right to redress your grievances through freedom of speech, the First Amendment, there goes the Second Amendment, the guns, because you wouldn't. They'd be afraid. They're afraid that you'd go. Let's say they try to take away your health care, your freedom of choice in health care, right? So you spoke out through town hall meetings. Had there been no freedom of speech, as Obama would like, through intimidation tactics, through the goon squads, through the fake environmental gangsters, had he had more power than he had, you would not have been permitted to speak. And the debate wouldn't have been permitted. It would have been a stooge-style debate, a Soviet-style debate, and there would have been no debate. It would have been fake. And they would have forced socialized medicine on America. So that's why freedom of speech is so important, which again goes to the core of this whole issue of banning Michael Savage in Britain, which is why I keep talking about it. Sure, it's about me, and sure, I want my name off the list, but sure, it's also the most important discussion that we could have this year, because without the First Amendment, you may as well say goodbye to all the others, to the Constitution. That's if you even know what they are. And I'm not going to read them to you. I have them right here on a chart. I don't need a blackboard and chalk, because I actually was a professor. That I reserved for those who never went to past the ninth grade. They like to have chalk and blackboards. It makes them feel powerful and important. But let's go down to the next level here. Should I accept it, and what will they say to me? Period, end of story. Tom in Pennsylvania, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hello, Michael. I'm a 60-year-old United States Navy veteran who loves his country, and I love my freedom. But I'm also one of those gun-toting, Bible-reading mountain people. And as far as you accepting that Cambridge Union invite,
yep,
absolutely. How can you even question? I mean, this is your opportunity.
Well, no. Well, that's the first thought I had was, wow, what an honor. The second wave of thoughts were, wait a minute, they're trying to set me up to look like a bad guy. And what are they going to do so? I don't really know.
I think you're coming at it all wrong, Michael. I sat around and thought about it myself.
Yeah.
You're fighting. You got to fight fire with these people. Now, their fire is humanism. That seems to be their whole political angle on how to get around people and how to get to people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fight fire with fire. You're a humanist. You've always been. You've got millions of people listening to you out here, Michael. I mean, my God. But I say, you know.
Well, I wouldn't call myself a humanist because it has connotations that I don't generally agree with. I would call myself more of a free thinker than I would call myself a humanist. I mean, I would like not to be pigeonholed as a humanist because there's a limitation within that definition, don't you think?
But as I believe, I also agree with you on that, but you're not accepting that as your platform. This is your fire against their fire. You have to fight them on their ground, and that's what they seem to be coming at everybody.
No, I agree with you, and those who have found ugly meanings in beautiful words are corrupt without being charming. And many, many of these left-wingers have tried to put ugly meanings in my beautiful words. In other words, my beautiful words of a nation being defined by borders, language, and culture was actually cited in the correspondence that we've uncovered through the Freedom of Information Act as a reason to ban me from England, because I speak for nationalists in America and nationalists in Britain who believe in their nation's sovereignty, who believe in borders, language, and culture. They have found that to be an ugly thing. Can you believe this?
As far as this political correctness, it's Marxist and it's illogical. It doesn't work in a free society.
Well, we know where it ends up. It ends up with Nazi Germany or the Soviet Union. I mean, any student of history knows where it ends up. Tom, I'm sending you a free copy of Banned in Britain. You're going to have this collector's item going out to you when it's ready, and it's going to be probably 8 weeks from now. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Questions to you. Should I accept the offer, and what will they throw at me to trip me up? The debate goes to you, the Savage Nation, back in a moment.
Savage. Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The Japanese don't care to, the Chinese wouldn't dare to. Hindus and Argentines sleep firmly from 12 to 1. But Englishmen detest our siesta. In the Philippines, they have lovely screens.
All right.
To protect you.
Well, you know the question and you know the answers. And Deuteronomy had some statements about this. Something about God chose you. Not because you were more in number than any people, because you were fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he swore unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt? Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, who keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repayeth them that hate him to their face. To destroy them, he will not be slack to him that hateth him, he will repay him to his face. Thou shalt therefore keep the commandment and the statutes and the ordinances which I command thee this day to do them. So to you it means nothing. To you it means nothing. To you the Bible's a joke written by olive growers of the ancient Middle East who were deficient in niacin, had hallucinations in the desert about burning bushes and about a figure up in heaven. And you are an emerged man, a modern man. You don't believe in such things. You believe in nothing. And by believing in nothing, you have become nothing. But you think you are something even though you are nothing. And because you are nothing, you hate those who are something. Those of you who are truly nothing hate more so those who are really something. And you do everything in your power to tear down those who are something in order to make them nothing like yourself. In order to feel good about being nothing, you take those who are something and try to destroy them. Just as the Obamaites, who know in their heart they are corrupt, try to destroy everything that was built up to tear it down so they can feel equal to. You understand how it works? And so therefore this debate is much bigger than you may think. Savage told WND he will likely accept the challenge and debate via video. Quote, said Savage, those who would defend political correctness, i.e. speech control, should visit North Korea or Cuba for examples of a harmonious state, close quote, he said. The Cambridge Union Society, founded in 1815, has hosted the likes of British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and American Presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt. There's no stopping him now. To quote a mayor of the city of San Francisco on a completely different subject. There's no stopping him now. Well, he wasn't invited to Cambridge Union. Although he of nothingness with an empty soul, and thee of nothingness of empty souls, have tried to condemn those of us with somethingness. There's no stopping us now. Now you have Obama. The first president in American history is going to force children to listen to a speech that he's going to give. Well, not exactly force them, but I'm sure any school that doesn't listen to his speech to school children. You see, no American president in history has ever addressed school children. It's a tradition of Hitler, of Raul and Fidel Castro. Every dictator usually addresses school children. Because you got to hand it to dictators. They see the future, that once they seize total power, they need a generation that loves them. Hitler had the Hitler youth, and Obama would like to have the Obama youth. Now, he can't create the Obama Youth Corps overnight, but he could certainly address the school children of America as a captive audience and sell them on fraudulent ideas such as global warming, health care for all, higher taxation for the pig rich, and things of that nature. And that's what happens in an emerging dictatorship, things of this nature. And that's why I oppose political correctness. It always leads to disaster. It always leads to slavery. Just as we are almost enslaved in this country, many of you are afraid to speak out at work. Many of you can't listen to my show. Many of you can't bring a book to work. Many of you can't bring an American flag to work. You think you're free? You are not free. You're a slave. You're already way beyond the freedoms that your father had. You don't have their freedoms. You're a prisoner, you're a slave in your own country. Why? Because you let the illegitimate, caberundum you. That's a takeoff on non caberundum illegitimi, or something to that effect. Don't let the illegitimates grind you down. You've been already half ground down. They're getting ready to go in for the kill now. So I have not yet been ground down. I don't know how, I don't know why, I keep going. The ever ready, the two hearts. I was given two hearts. I'm living for two men. I'm living for me, and I'm living for my brother who never lived.
Savage.
It is good to live in the greatest country on earth, even though we are facing extremely dangerous times, with a nascent dictator emerging in the White House, surrounded by some very shady characters. It's still good to be an American. And Moses told the children of Israel according to all that the Lord commanded Moses the following. And Moses spoke unto the heads of the tribes of the children of Israel, and he said, this is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. When a man voweth a vow unto the Lord, or sweareth an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. Now you understand why certain individuals despise the Bible and would like to burn it, why they mock it, why they take down the Ten Commandments, why they hate freedom of speech. It started with the Bible. It talks about things such as bonds and oaths and swearing and sticking to these things. And the Lord likes certain things done a certain way, and that's why they would like the Bible not only banned but burned. That's their idea of political correctness and freedom of speech. There are no Bibles in North Korea that I know of. Any Bibles in North Korea? Where there used to be Bibles in hotels in America, there's now on-demand pornography. And so we have a debased, degenerate, corrupt society. They don't even understand what freedom is. They think that pornography is freedom. They think that the ability to use drugs at all turn of the day, that's freedom. They've been completely turned. And I'm going to read one more piece, if you don't mind, because at a moment like this, I have to go back to the basics. It's a very strange time for me. Ups and downs is a seesaw, it's a roller coaster, good and bad, black and white. For the Lord will have compassion on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land, and the stranger shall join himself with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. Now listen to this. And the peoples shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and for handmaids. And they shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. They shall take them captive, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. Now I want to ask you something. Who is the oppressed here? Michael Savage or the British government? Who is David here? Michael Savage or the British government? Who is the underdog here? Michael Savage or the little government, the English government? If you can't answer that question, then your brains are scrambled. I'm everything America used to believe in. I used to hear that America liked the little guy. America liked the underdog. America liked the oppressed. America supported the oppressed. Here I am, the oppressed. Here I am, the little guy. Here I am, the man on the bottom facing an entire government. And who is on my side? Not the liberals, not the progressives, but the conservatives. So again, ladies and gentlemen, I again tell you we are in dangerous times where everything is upside down. The progressives are the fascists, those who stroke themselves on the head, tell everyone that they're progressives. They are actually the National Socialists of yesteryear come back to bite us in the behind. They don't even know it. Most of them don't even know it. They're so filled with themselves, they don't even understand they are the National Socialists of the Germany of the 1930s. They would never believe you if you told them that. If you held up a mirror to them, they wouldn't believe you. They publish journals and articles, and they go on MSNBC and CNN, and they're convinced that they're right. But in fact, they stand for everything that is opposed to the American way. Everything from the top to the bottom. What is more basic than freedom of speech? Nothing. It's the core of all our other freedoms. And yet not one of them has said, you know, Savage, though I object and detest even many of the things you say, I would fight to the death your right to say it. Now, it is true that the ACLU came out against this banning in England, as they should have, but they've done nothing since. They actually should have taken the case if they were really true to their beliefs. But as you well know, they don't really believe that. They really believe in the oppression of speech. So again, should I accept this or not? And no one has called yet. I haven't had one liberal call the show and defend political correctness. It's very interesting. I would like you to do so. I would like to hear the other side of the argument. You know, teach me the errors of my ways. Tell me why there should not be freedom of speech. In other words, what do you mean political correctness? What does that actually mean? Thou shalt not offend someone who is offended? whose ever ox is gored is the oppressed? No, right now I'm the oppressed. The whole government has said, you can't come into my country. So, yes or no, should I go? And what are the arguments against this? Charlie in New York, WOR. Go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Doctor, you have to go there. You have the upper hand as far as I'm concerned. Because just by being invited to that, invited there, they're starting to start some type of movement on their own over there.
I think so. I think that even, well, look, there was a poll done when this first happened by the newspapers over there in May, and it was 80-20 running in my favor that the government was wrong. Now, that includes Muslims, even. Many of them agreed that I shouldn't have been banned, incidentally. The modern Muslim did not want me banned. The fanatic throwback, of course, wanted me banned. So look at the look who's united there. The fanatic throwback who would kill England itself is united with the Labor Socialist Party. How do you like that, Charlie?
And I think you should try to get into the country just to force that issue on them to say, you're stopping me from coming over here for freedom.
Well, I understand. A lot of people have said, go there and make a scene. I will not do that. I'm not. I may go to Ireland at some point, the Republic of Ireland, and give a speech in Ireland. I may take 500 listeners with me on a trip to Ireland, and we will then march to the border of where Ireland meets the controlled area controlled by the British. And I will give a speech there holding both the Union Jack and the flag of the Republic of Ireland. That's something I have in mind. I'll go to the true land of freedom, the Republic of Ireland.
That's what you represent. You represent.
That's freedom. What I'll do. That's the thing I might do. I've always wanted to visit Ireland. I have not been there. I've been to England a few times. I haven't been there in a long time because I had never intended to go back. I mean, I always liked the country. I love the architecture. I like, remember, you know, this is interesting. Do you know that my collection of medicinal plants is housed in the Kew Gardens in London? Do you know that? All the years I collected plants looking for cures, I made 7 sets of herbarium specimens, and one was sent to Kew Gardens in London. I visited it once way back in the 70s or 80s. I don't remember which. Another collection is in the Bishop Museum in Hawaii. Another collection is in the Fiji Museum. I have a whole collection of them, which I just got out of a warehouse. I can't believe this story. I went to a warehouse that I keep here in the Bay Area, and I put my herbarium of these rare plants in there in 1995, and I never went back. So they're sitting in this warehouse in bad storage, unair-conditioned storage, since 1995. I went there, and I figured, okay, I'm going to open it up. All the plants are going to be eaten alive. They weren't. I had put mothballs in there. You know, my mother was right. And you can still smell the mothballs from 95 till now. And none of the plants have been eaten up. So the collection is still there. I threw in the mothballs and put it back in storage. It's interesting to me. But the point is that my plant collection is in the Kew Gardens in London. I guess Gordon Brown could go now and purge them out of the Kew Gardens. Gordon Brown maybe could have one of his fascist socialites go into the Kew Gardens and look for my collections and burn them. He could have a plant burning. Because after all, they're fascist plants, aren't they? They were collected by the evil Michael Savage back in the 1960s and 70s in Fiji and Tonga and such, when he was a humble botanist looking for cures from the jungles. They call them rainforests. Now we call them jungles. It doesn't matter what you call them. I actually did the plant collecting. Now, most of the frauds in the environmental business have never actually been in a jungle. They've been in a jungle in their own mind because they think that they're actually Charles Darwin. But they've actually never been in a rainforest, never collected plants, but they think they know more about the environment than I do. They know nothing. Zero. There is no anthropogenic global warming, so far as I can tell. There is no man-made global warming. It's a scam to control businesses and impose the highest tax in American history. It'll cripple the nation, destroy us. And yet, Obama the genius went to Harvard, lawyer. He believes in global warming. How about me debating Obama on global warming? How about me debating Al Gore on global warming? I open this up at any time to debate either of them. You know that Al Gore refuses to debate anybody because he's a liar? I stand here and say before you, definitively, Al Gore is a fraud and a liar, a con man, because he will not debate the people who can destroy him verbally because they know the facts. And I'll give you one fact. Here's one for all of you schmucks who believe that man caused global warming. Okay, schmucks, you hyper-educated morons, here it comes. You don't like what I'm saying? Good. Listen to what I'm going to say to you. Answer this question. Show how smart you are. Go ahead. You're all smart in your drawing rooms there on the Upper East Side. But when you get around someone like me, you fall apart. That's why you don't want anyone like me around you. That's why Gordon Brown doesn't want me in England. Because I could devastate him verbally. I could crush them. with three sentences. Let's start with global warming. Schmuck on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Here, schmuck, genius, PhD, moron, lawyer. Here it is, schmuck. You ready for it? Explain the following. There were several ice ages in the history of the planet. Correct? And so far as we know, several ice ages came and went. The ice, which once went down as far as, almost as far as I remember, down past the Great Plains here in America, maybe even farther than that, covered the Earth from the North Pole almost to the equator. And yet the ice receded long before man had invented the internal combustion engine, when there was a very small population of mankind. There were only a few fires here and there. Why did the ice melt? Did it melt because of the Model T Ford? Did it melt because of the SUV? Did it melt because man caused global warming, schmuck? Use common sense, putz. Use a fifth grade education in science to understand you don't know what you're talking about. You people are so screwed up on the left that you actually believe your own lies because you won't let anyone who knows the truth near you. Well, I have to take my hats off to the people in England, at least the Cambridge Union, is willing to listen to the other side. That's more than I could say for Fox News. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So I carry the flag of freedom here for the United States of America at this time. Those who are fighting and dying in Iraq or Afghanistan are the real heroes. We know that. We don't even know why they're in Afghanistan. In fact, I told you that I predicted last week there'd be a growing anti-war movement, and it would come from the right, that the left is on board because it's Obama's war. And as you well know, they're hypocrites. They were never anti-war. They were only anti-Bush. But moving aside from that, tell me what's more fundamental to a free society than freedom of speech, because without freedom of speech, you lose all the other amendments. If you cannot stand up and say no, why, they could roll you over. So here I am, banned in Britain by Gordon Brown, the illegitimate Labour government, socialist government is what they really are. And yet today I receive a letter that the Cambridge Union Society has invited me to debate the issue of political correctness on October 15, 2009. They say you could either address the society by live video link or pending any revisions of your legal status in person. Yeah, the letter is up on michaelsavage.com if you think I've invented it. It's a great honor, but it's filled with pitfalls, as are all honors. I mean, it's not necessarily going to be a loving audience. It could be a hostile audience. Remember, political correctness is about controlling people. And Obama came to power because of political correctness, because you were afraid to say anything because you were told you were racist if you said one word against them. They got you in a corner. Now, when you start against the socialized medicine, all of the goon squad, oh, they want to stop it because he's black like me. You heard that last week? Could you believe her? And now suddenly it's about race. It's not about socialism. Oh, you got to look at what Mr. Castro did in Cuba. He did great things. She's a congresswoman. In my day, she'd be in prison. Any congresswoman who said Castro's a great man, when we know he's a mass murderer and a tyrant, would automatically, if we had a real FBI, would be arrested and interrogated. You talk about a nation that's fallen apart. Here it is upside down. Michael Savage calls for borders, language, and culture, and he's public enemy number one to the British, to the illegitimate Labour government in Britain, I should say, not all of the British. 80% of the British people support me. How many of, what percent of the American people support me? I don't know. What percent of Fox News supports me? Zero. So where does that put Fox News, and why am I hammering them? Because I want you to understand that without the support of the American media, without the support of the American Congress, this battle is becoming very difficult. But I have you. And look what happened without Fox News. Look what happened without one congressman or senator backing me up. Look what happened. Here I am invited to speak before the Cambridge Union, where Theodore Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, Henry Kissinger spoke. Quite an honor, isn't it? I will carry the flag of truth and the flag of freedom for you. Or should I? And if I do, what will they do to trip me up? How are they going to defend political correctness? How will they do so? Dennis in Sacramento, go ahead, please. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, great. I teach critical thinking. I'm a philosophy professor at Sierra College. If I was to take their position, the first thing that I would do if I were them would be, of course, define their terms. What do they mean by political correctness? And once they've defined their terms in a way that suits their particular argumentation, then they would go and establish a certain ethical standard, probably something like a utilitarian standard, meaning that the best is the best for all. The individual is not necessarily taken into consideration, but what's the best for society? What's the best situation for everybody?
Here's the thing. The debate will be entitled, quote, "This House Believes Political Correctness is Sane and Necessary," close quote. So they've already established what they're going to say, and we would be delighted if you, Savage, were available to speak in opposition to the motion. So I would say that what? Political correctness is insane and unnecessary? So they've already put me in a box, haven't they?
What do you mean by political correctness? And then,
well, here it is. I'll read it to you. I read you some of the things that I've already found on the internet. To advocate self-reflective, sensitive language and behavior is not to tyrannize. They've already, I mean, you read this on the internet. They've already tried to tell you that although they're controlling what you're going to say, they're not tyrannizing you.
So who is it? Who benefits? The society or you? Who's more important? What they determine will be specific examples. Now, they could also start getting on a kind of a slippery slope, meaning, well, this could happen and that could happen, and they start fabricating.
How would you answer this? What if one of them said, okay, Michael, every city and every county have zoning laws, and these zoning laws, which may be offensive to some, are appropriate in order to make certain that certain standards are upheld. How would you answer that, Michael Savage? In other words, political correctness to us are just simply zoning laws. How would you argue that, sir? Dennis, how would you take – what argument would you give to a zoning law analogy?
I think what you'd have to do is get more to the bottom line. Who should be benefited by the law? Is the law for the individual, as you say, freedom and that sort of thing? Or perhaps there are circumstances
– Well, Dennis, you see, Dennis, I, with all due respect to your professorship, I could answer that even though that's a tough one. I probably picked the toughest possible thing they could throw at me. I hope they're not listening. I'm sure my enemies already emailed it to England. But here's my answer. We already have controls on speech in the form of defamation and obscenity, don't we? They're already regulated. So when you start to go beyond these, quote, zoning laws of defamation and obscenity, where do they end is the issue. At what point do we say enough is enough? Where does society draw the line in weighing the rights of individuals against the needs of the community? And who is the community? Who defines the community? Gordon Brown defines the community?
Well, obviously, because they have the control.
Who's okay, so they are the community. So Obama then now says that he is the community. He knows what's best for America. But do most Americans agree with him? Not anymore. Obama's poll numbers have fallen. Dennis, we're almost out of time. Let me send you a copy of Banned in Britain when it comes out. Thank you for joining the discussion. And again, I invite you to go to michaelsavage.com and review the letter from the Cambridge Union Society. If you're not disposed to do so, then I will discuss this at other times on this program. I also would invite you to finally do the right thing. Take the opportunity to own the classic first edition of Banned in Britain, because it is available now only on michaelsavage.com. And with this invitation, that book will become a classic. I'm telling you, your ancestors will look back. They say, gee, Grandpa bought this book from Michael Savage. He was the only talk show host ever banned in Britain. I want that book. There you go. How's that? Does that work for you? The hem can't even do that. The hem's not even banned from the Preparation H factory. That's where we hear he went this week. Blackboard and all. Anyway, well, let's move on. I'm just playing games here. I like to get comedic in the political arena. It relieves me of certain stresses. But it's an interesting thing. I'll celebrate tonight. I'll celebrate again the same way. Seafood sausage. Again, zuppa de mare. I'm going to have those things, man. Those, what are they, mussels marinara? Oh, my God, what a sauce. The problem is you can't sleep at night. And the reason you can't sleep is my business, not yours. But anyway, we'll go on tomorrow with this. Another big hour. Watch out for that shellfish. It may have some heavy metals, but I think those heavy metals fall to the right portion of the body. Anyway, another big hour in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning.
The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, the big news today is that Michael Savage has been invited by the Cambridge Union in England to debate. That's right. Banned talk show host Michael Savage invited to England to debate political correctness. You're not going to believe this. Of course, I can't go there. They know that. But they're willing to debate me on this on video. Now, this centuries-old society hosted Churchill, Reagan, and Teddy Roosevelt. Yet our own country doesn't recognize who I am. They refuse to recognize. Fox has banned me. I understand because of the leprechaun. Here I am invited to Britain, where I've been banned, by the most vaunted two-century-old Cambridge Union Society to participate in a debate next month, yet I am banned by ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and Fox News. If you people really understood that you live in a totalitarian media dictatorship right now, I think you'd be more frightened than you already are. You rightly fear the Obama administration, but you really should be fearing the media administration. How is it that I, Michael Savage, invited to a centuries-old debating society is never heard from on even Fox News? Doesn't that frighten you? Well, the fact of the matter is it should frighten you, and you shouldn't let them get away with it. I will read you the letter. Dear Mr. Savage, the Cambridge Union has been following you with great interest in recent weeks. We understand that you are fighting to overturn a ban on entering the UK imposed by the Home Office and former Home Secretary Jackie Smith. The decision to ban you has caused quite a stir, and we are keen to know how your situation progresses, especially now that Jackie Smith has resigned from the cabinet. I'm reading from the Cambridge Union Society, Cambridge, England, not Cambridge, Massachusetts. They go on. The Cambridge Union was founded in 1815, and is the world's oldest debating society. We have enjoyed the presence of many high-profile speakers, including American presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt, and Nobel Peace Prize winner Henry Kissinger. We understand that your radio show, The Savage Nation, is the third most popular show in America. And although controversial, we think that you are more qualified than anyone to talk about the subject of political correctness in America and Britain. We write to invite you to speak at a debate on the subject of political correctness at the Cambridge Union Society. The debate will be titled, "This House Believes Political Correctness is Sane and Necessary." And we would be delighted if you were available to speak in opposition of the motion. The debate will take place in Cambridge on Thursday, October 15, 2009. You could either address the society by live video link or pending any revisions of your legal status in person. We look forward to receiving your reply. Best wishes, Julian Domerc and Jonathan Lawrence, Presidents, Cambridge Union Society. It's up on michaelsavage.com. So here I am, invited to the Cambridge Union Debating Society, founded in 1815, an organization that hosted Prime Minister Winston Churchill, Ronald Reagan, Theodore Roosevelt, Henry Kissinger, and you never hear from Michael Savage on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox News. What does that tell you about the media dictatorship that you are living in the United States of America? What does it tell you about Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly? You have an obligation to stand up and speak out for me. Because if you don't stand up and speak out for me by calling these shows and pressuring these organizations, you will be living in a greater dictatorship than you could ever imagine. Yes, fear the Obama administration, but you should also fear your media dictatorship. That's the story today on The Savage Nation.
I think what's an amazing fact about this, Michael, is that during the 1930s, when Winston Churchill in England was invited to exactly this sort of forum in order to debate his views, because he was the one major political figure in England who was arguing for increased military expenditure in the face of the rise of the Nazi threat, he was shouted down at these self-same forums by peaceniks, by people who didn't want war at any cost whatsoever.
The communist left in England has long been active, and they try to stop Churchill from rebuilding the military. Had he not succeeded, Britain would have fallen to Germany.
Exactly. Exactly. You are his ideological successor, in other words.
That's amazing. Just amazing. Well, the question is, should I go? Now, of course, I can't go legally, physically, because Gordon Brown, who released the Lockerbie bomber, has imprisoned Michael Savage, in a sense, put up a wall. You know, where's the left screaming, Mr. President, tear down that wall? What is Gordon Brown so afraid of, by the way? What is it that I could say that would frighten him so much? The answer is, he is controlled like a puppet by fascist dictatorships in the Middle East, in my opinion. But let's get down to this. They want me to debate against political correctness. This House believes political correctness is sane and necessary. And we would be delighted if you were available to speak in opposition of the motion. How can you defend political correctness? What are the arguments in favor of controlling speech? Well, I guess you'd have to go to Kim Jong-il in North Korea to get that answer, wouldn't you, Beowulf?
You absolutely would. I mean, this is a method that has been used by people within democracies to a certain extent, but also by tyrants also who want to control the language, because changing language is one of the key ways they claim to changing society for the better. But it's often
yes,
been
but
for the
American
worse.
Left, which has imposed so-called political correctness on America and on Britain, has basically stolen free speech from most of the citizenry. They have, in fact, stolen free speech in the name of free speech. The left are fascists at their core. Well, the big news is the Cambridge Union Society, Cambridge, England, has invited a banned talk show host, Michael Savage, to come to England, either in person or by video link, to debate. Isn't it amazing, Beowulf, that I'm not permitted to debate my situation on Fox News? Let's put aside the others. We know what to expect from them. Don't you think it's odd that Fox News is not embarrassed by their position?
And what's amazing is that they haven't even been bold enough to have proclaimed it to the world that they refuse to have you on. They simply ignore you, refuse to invite you. At least England, you know, put it forward publicly.
Well, Beowulf, should I do this? I mean, what kind of traps do you think they're going to set for me over there?
Well, I mean, they're going to have a whole cadre of arguments against you. They're going to say that they're trying to change society for the better with political correctness.
Well, let's pause at that. Yes, they'll say that political correctness keeps people from saying violent things and vile things, and it keeps people peaceful. Well, let's go to Cuba, where political correctness is the norm. Castro assassinated his enemies in the beginning, imprisoned his enemies for over 30 years, and right now the people live in a prison camp where if they say anything against Castro or the regime, the communist regime in Cuba, they are rounded up by the secret police. That's exactly what political correctness is, Beowulf.
That's right. And what starts as political correctness in the name of keeping things safe and sane, so to speak, ends up often gravitating towards a dictatorship, towards a form of fascism.
Well, let me just conclude this now by saying the following. Our First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech, not polite speech. Polite speech does not need the First Amendment. My kind of speech was written specifically because of the First Amendment. So if you don't like Michael Savage, you may as well go to the U.S. Constitution and put an X through the First Amendment. And while you're at it, put an X through the Second Amendment and the Third Amendment. You may as well put an X through the whole Bill of Rights, because that's what these left-wing vermin are doing to us. And damn it, I am going to speak before the Cambridge Union, and I will do it by video link, and I will put Gordon Brown on notice that I will debate him anytime, anywhere, in any place. How could I say no to a debating society that has invited Ronald Reagan, Winston Churchill, Teddy Roosevelt, and Nobel Peace Prize winner Henry Kissinger? In fact, I should win the Nobel Peace Prize for fighting for free speech for all of the West, Beowulf. That's my final statement. I deserve a Nobel Peace Prize.
And this is something that transcends ideology. It doesn't matter whether you're on the left or the right. This is an issue of free speech. This is an issue. Political correctness is something that curtails speech of all political persuasions. It doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on. This is an effrontery to your freedoms.
I will again today focus on the Cambridge Union Society and ask the audience, as we've been doing now, should I go to Cambridge and do this?
Savage.
As I've been telling you all day today, I have been invited to the oldest debating society in the world in England, the Cambridge Debating Society, at the Cambridge Union. But Prime Minister Gordon Brown of the very same nation still bars me from the United Kingdom. This is the same Gordon Brown who did nothing while the Lockerbie bomber was released to a hero's welcome in Libya. Here is Brown again continuing to claim that no deal was made with Gaddafi.
Our interest throughout has been to strengthen the coalition against international terrorism. I made it clear that for us there was never a linkage between any other issue and the Scottish Government's own decision about Megrahi's future. I respect the right of Scottish ministers to make the decision and the decision, but on our part, there was no conspiracy, no cover-up, no double-dealing, no deal in oil, no attempt to instruct Scottish ministers, no private assurances by me to Colonel Gaddafi. We were absolutely clear throughout with the Libyans and everyone else that this was a decision for the Scottish government.
Well, I don't believe him. Now, here's one of the few good men in England, David Cameron, of the conservative side, calling the situation exactly what it is, double dealing.
The double dealing is quite straightforward. The accusation is that they said one thing to the Libyans, we don't want this man to die in prison, and yet the British government had pretty consistently said to the Americans, and remember, many, many Americans died on that Pan Am flight and were murdered on that Pan Am flight, said to the Americans that this man would serve his sentence in Scotland. That's why there's such a large international and diplomatic row, and that's why President Obama has expressed his opinion, saying the release of this man was wrong, and many others around the world have expressed their opinion, but we're still waiting for the British Prime Minister to be straight with the British people and say what he thinks about the release. I'm very clear, I think it was wrong. I think that man should be in prison.
At least there's someone in that country in politics who seems to get it. Listen to him again.
Many of the victims feel very badly let down. I think one of our most important allies, America, feels badly let down. I think Britain's reputation is suffering from this. And I think, as you say, there are complexities in this, and the way to deal with that is to have a brief inquiry led, I would argue, by a former permanent secretary to look at all of the paperwork, all of the meetings, all of the things that were said, and to produce a short report so we can see what the British government has been doing in our name. That needs to be done. This has now been dragging on for week after week. I think the government's been incompetent in dealing with it. They need to grip it. They need to announce that inquiry and get it underway.
They've not only let America down, they've let all of humanity down by denying the humanity of the Lockerbie victims for an oil deal and by locking Michael Savage out of England. Go read Banned in Britain on michaelsavage.com. You'll see what the story's all about. Okay, moving on. We're speaking with a man from WOR Land in New York. George, so you grew up a white guy in Hell's Kitchen, you said, or near Chinatown?
Chinatown, in Chinatown.
Are you Italian?
No, sir.
No, because that's right where Little Italy meets Chinatown on Canal Street?
Yeah, I was over a little more west by Henry and Pike.
All right, so how did your family wind up living in what's called Chinatown?
Well, I'm first generation American. My parents immigrated from Germany just after the war, and they had take anything.
You mean World War which, one or two?
Two.
So you were born in 46, 47?
47.
Oh, so you're a kid born there. They took whatever they could get, right?
Exactly.
So how did you fit in being born then with Chinese kids? Did they accept you?
Absolutely. My best friend was one of my best friends was a Chinese family who lived on the same floor in the sixth floor walk-up tenement.
Right. What I'm getting at by your story is that by the liberal stories today, you should have hated each other. That till they came along with the Great Society, every race hated each other till the white liberal showed up, when the exact opposite is true. The races got along better until the white liberal came along and turned races against each other.
That's right. We had a mixed neighborhood. We had Italians, we had Jews, Germans, Chinese, you name it, they were there. And everybody got along. Everybody's mother watched everybody else's kid. There was a certain...
Isn't that amazing? Well, there's a piece of American history, George, that needs to be written about to a great extent, because the liars who tell you that America was a land of hatred till they came along, the communist white man, till a communist white man came along, that we were living in hell in America.
No. I won't agree with that. And the only other reason, I've been listening to you for over 10 years, and right now talking to you is almost as good as sex. Okay.
Oh, well, please. This is a family show, George. I didn't know you were going to go there.
Well, anyway, you love dogs. I've had dogs since I was 7 years old. And
I do. Have you read my book, Psychological Nudity?
No, I've been trying to get it, but
I'm going to send you a free copy, particularly the story, Tippy Dies and Thrown in a Garbage Truck. When your dog died when you were a kid, did they throw him in a garbage truck like Tippy?
No, sir. We had a funeral attendance of 15 people, and the vet threw everybody out of the office.
You know, it's amazing. So I came from a very unusual background, sir, to say it in a... So no, I thought everyone threw their dog in a garbage truck when it died. I must have had a weird family.
No, not at all.
Harsh. Ooh, I had a harsh upbringing. I had no idea. Between the cyanide and throwing a dog in a garbage truck when it died, I thought everyone did that.
Mr. Savage, could I please just tell you this? She was a 140-pound Rottweiler.
Oh, boy.
And
wow.
She was the most gentle creature. And she.
Well, I love with the women and the feminists in San Francisco. They walk around with Rottweilers like that. They come up to men and they sniff your crotch and you're scared to death they're going to tear them off. And they say, don't worry, she's gentle. And then, you know, in between your leg. Yeah, we're all gentle. No, I don't go for that. I'm sorry. Thanks for the call. Keep them on the line for the book. I don't believe there's such a thing as a gentle Rottweiler. To strangers? Are you kidding me? My dog is gentle, but even he's capable of being a dog. You try to take away a toy from Teddy, even he goes atavistic on you. And a pair of back teeth on him, you understand how they survived all those years. They got a pair of sharp teeth in the back that could rip your hand off. When you think about it, you say, is a small dog potentially dangerous, 10 pounds? By himself, no. But 10 of them coming at you? A mosquito. Think of what a mosquito could do with you carrying a bacteria. Okay? So you say, why? Anything can harm you. It gets you in the right spot. But the Chinese were smart in the bedrooms, the emperor's bedrooms, where they had 10, 20 Lhasa Apsus trained to kill. Because one big dog, the enemy, the assassin, could kill like a person. They could cut its throat. But 20 Lhasa Apsus barking and screaming and yapping and coming at you in every direction, that's almost impossible even for a ninja to... And by that time already, the guards are there, you see. That's how that worked. So if you're thinking of watchdogs, I would suggest lots of small ones rather than one chestnut man, so to speak. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back. My website, michaelsavage.com, was attacked and taken down for a short period a while back by an invader after I happened to criticize the UK leadership for the release of the Lockerbie bomber, okay? Joining us now with his thoughts on this is Selwyn Duke.
Hi, Michael. Great to be here again as an invited guest on the Savage Nation. Unfortunately, as many in the audience know, you had some uninvited guests at your website recently. I'm talking about some hackers who worked their way into your site and caused it to shut down for an hour the Saturday before last. Now, I know, Michael, that you theorized that perhaps the British government was behind the attack, given the hackers' timing. After all, their intrusion came right after you harshly criticized the UK for its release of Lockerbie bomber Abdel Basset al-Megrahi, which, by the way, we now hear might have been an amnesty for oil deal. But be that as it may, we also know that you've long been in the UK's crosshairs, since they banned you from traveling to their country for reasons of political correctness. That is, they wanted to ban certain Muslim terrorists from their soil, which is understandable, of course, but they also didn't want to be accused of bigotry in singling out Muslims. So, what did they do? Well, as I've said before, they pulled a Neville Chamberlain, and they traded your reputation for peace in our time. By the way, a strategy that only guarantees they'll be in pieces in time.
Well, that's for sure. If the Brits keep this up, they'll be banned from their own country.
Yeah, Michael, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it seems like common sense is already banned with the UK's bizarro world of political correctness, which involves, you might say, a rather unique blend of Orwell's 1984 and Monty Python, so maybe the common man is next. But anyway, Michael, getting back to the attack on your website, it would be interesting if you could trace the Internet Protocol address that this hacker attack originated from. And I'll tell you why. You see, I agree that the attack might be associated with the UK's targeting of you, but my theory is a bit different. I think it has to do with the fact that your well-publicized problems, and I mean the ban, the lawsuit, the whole nine yards, have increased your profile, especially overseas and in certain hostile circles, specifically hostile leftist and Islamic ones. And I say this because of history, because the attack is part of a pattern. The fact is that MichaelSavage.com is the latest in a long line of traditionalist websites victimized by hacker intrusion. And I'll mention a few. You have the Daily Telegraph. You have Glenn Reynolds' site, Instapundit.com, HughHewitt.com, Powerline.com, a major Fox News site, and, most notably here, the anti-Islamist site, JihadWatch.com. They were all victims, and that's just a handful. In fact, listen to this. In 2006, 27 traditionalist Hosting Matters blogs were all taken down at the same time. And I've got a personal story here, too. NewsWithViews.com, which publishes my work, seems to have been attacked more than once. For instance, I can tell you that just earlier this year, I received a call from its publisher telling me that its email account was being targeted and that I'd have to contact them via a different email address. So that's how common it is. I've got personal experience with this myself. And there's something else. Now, since I don't make any effort to be fair and balanced, just fair and truthful, so I guess I'm out of step with the times, I'm going to say that it seems like these cyber attacks are right out of the left's playbook. I mean, you don't see people on the right doing this too much. In fact, listen to this. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security itself issued a report just this past January, and it said that left-wing extremists were likely to increase the use of these attacks during the next decade. Moreover, the left's strange Islamist bedfellows use this tactic quite liberally as well. For instance, in 2008, it seems like they didn't like Dutch anti-Islamist commentary such as politician Geert Wilders' movie Fitna too much. So, you know what the cyber jihadis did? They launched an attack on a Dutch hosting company that affected more than 200 websites. Oh, and I should mention something else. The attack on JihadWatch.com was traced back to guess where? Turkey. And an attack on another anti-Islamist site originated with computers in our great ally, Saudi Arabia.
Well, I guess this speaks volumes about the people launching these cyber attacks because they seem to think that attacking websites is a substitute for having insights.
Yes, Michael, and this is why it wouldn't surprise me at all if the attack on your site was the handiwork of Islamists, perhaps in a Muslim country, perhaps in Britain, I don't know. But what we can know for sure is that if Islamists aren't the culprit, their leftist fifth column certainly is. But whatever the case, and people have to understand this, cyber attacks are far from harmless. They're a type of virtual vandalism, you might say. And as you can attest, Michael, they cause the target to incur reparative costs. And sometimes I imagine they're quite high. Not only that, there's also the possibility, this might not have happened too much, but it is a possibility, that if such costs become too high for a hosting company, it just might refuse to host the targeted site. And this would cause the web page to disappear from the internet until and unless it was able to find a different hosting company. Now, getting back to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security report, you know something? It isn't surprising that the left would have no compunction about using cyber attacks. And listen, we can't truly appreciate the threat posed by the left unless we understand why. The reason is this. Understand that the left is morally relativistic at its core, meaning its members generally don't believe in absolute moral truth. Now, because of this, there's nothing to govern their agenda except for their own desires, their own feelings. In other words, a person who understands that we're meant to govern ourselves with that eternal unchanging moral yardstick called truth realizes that the end doesn't really justify the means, that Machiavellian idea. Now, sure, he may not be perfect, but he understands that he can't just follow his heart, as is so fashionable to say nowadays. He knows that his emotions aren't the arbiters of reality. And this is, by the way, understand this, why Saul the Red Alinsky, you know, that guy who influenced Obama and who wrote the book Rules for Radicals, why Alinsky instructed his followers to force their adversaries, and that means us, by the way, to live up to their own principles. Because, you see, he understood that we actually have some. But the left, on the other hand, proceeds largely unencumbered by morality. They really do, morality properly understood. Whatever helps them achieve their immediate goal, instituting faux marriage, desensitizing people to abortion, stifling anti-Islamist dissent, or whatever the flavor of the day might be, is justifiable in their minds. Their values, quote-unquote, originate from within and change with the winds of convenience. So, while we traditionalists fight abiding by Queensberry rules, you know what? Our enemies go at it no holds barred. Of course, we can never take this leaf out of the left's book, because this would require a complete abandonment of morality. But we also have to be careful not to bring a knife to a gunfight, as they say. As for your website, Michael, if it's any consolation, it was only hacked because, you know why? You're big enough and bold enough to make a difference, that's why. To irritate the powers that be, or the powers that want to be. I mean, my website, selwynduke.com, there's my shameless plug, has never been deemed hack-worthy. I also can still travel to Britain, so I must be doing something wrong. Michael, thanks for having me on the show, and God bless you and the millions of others in the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Selwyn.
Savage.
There was a story that came out briefly and quickly buried by the midstream media about Fatima Barry, a 17-year-old girl who has fled her parents' house, reportedly for fear of her life, since converting to Christianity. Joining us today is former PLO member and author of several books like Why We Want to Kill You and God's War on Terror, Waleed Shubat, who says he believes her story and is here to explain what is going on. Waleed, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on your show again.
What do you think is going on with this story?
Rifqa Berry is a Muslim, used to be a Muslim from Sri Lanka with her family. She converted 4 years ago to Christianity. She began to become active in her faith. She was noticed by the local mosque in a Noor Islamic Center, which is in Ohio. And this is a hub of Islamic fundamentalism. Her father is a member of a Noor Islamic Center, which really had this Salah Sultan, who is an active Hamas activist, Al-Qaeda supporter, also a colleague of Sheikh Qaradawi. These men are illegal to enter into the United States because they are terrorists or supporter of terrorism. The mosque itself basically made it public of her conversion, which means she should be killed. She was abused by her father. She was hit and beaten by her father. In fact, in the school records, it shows that there's been several cases in which she was examined and proven to be beaten by her family. She then was threatened by her father when the mosque began to spout the issue publicly. She was threatened by her father to be killed as an honor killing. In Islam, honor killing does not only encompass women who were caught in acts of adultery, but it encompasses anyone who leaves the faith of Islam. Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, said in the Arabic language, Tarik al-Din yuqtal, whoever leaves the faith of Islam, he should be killed. In the Quran itself, in Quran chapter 4, verse 89, فَإِن تَوَلَّوْا فَخُذُوهُمْ وَقْتُلُوهُمْ. If they leave the faith or become renegade, then seize them and slay them wherever you find them. In other words, it becomes sort of a citizen arrest. Anyone could kill them wherever they are found, and they are justified of doing so.
Well, this is a serious problem. Well, what happened after the threats?
After she was threatened by her father, she took a bus and fled to Florida. So the court system in Florida has basically allowed her to remain in custody as a juvenile until the court date that is set, I believe, in a month or so to decide her fate. If she ends up going to Sri Lanka, it is an assured death. Her father lied in his paperwork when he filed in the court system saying that he basically has no money. It was found that he runs a business, jewelry business, and he makes $250,000 a year. He dissolved the business in hope to basically leave the country because he's here on a business visa, of course. And if he is taken out of the country or leaving the country, his daughter will have to go with him and will suffer further persecution in Sri Lanka. She could be married off or she could be killed. If she is married off in Sri Lanka or she moves to Sri Lanka, let's not forget, even if she is a U.S. citizen, no Muslim country to date is signatory to the Hague Convention regarding the abduction of women and children. And the reason Muslim countries refuse to sign the Hague is because in the Quran it's very clear, الرِّجَالُ قَوَّمُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ, which means the men are superior over the women. So she has no chance. As a matter of fact, even any American, and I deal with this every day at churches and universities, every place I go speak, there's always these women that come to me who are struggling and suffering with their children overseas, husband who's a Muslim who can take the daughter overseas. And God forbid it's a girl. If any American woman has a girl for a Muslim husband, then the punishment of a girl marrying out of the faith of Islam is death. This is why you never hear of Muslim girls marrying non-Muslims. It doesn't matter, Muslim or Christian. If she leaves the faith or she marries a non-Muslim, she's to be killed. This fact is obvious. We have had several situations. Bridges TV is a prime example. This is a TV program that's supposed to be building bridges with non-Muslims. When the wife decided to leave the husband, he decapitated her.
Oh, my God.
Very little has been said in the media on this issue with Bridges TV. A man who killed his two daughters in Texas. Another husband and wife who killed their daughter while the FBI was listening in and recording and did not catch it until the day after. She was killed meticulously and very slowly by her parents. So we have several situations and conditions proving the point beyond shadow of a doubt that honor killing is very well exercised here in the West.
The media seems to have taken the "it can't happen here" or "this isn't a real problem" excuse for not covering the story. But you have experienced these types of problems firsthand yourself?
When I lived in the Middle East, my mother was prohibited from leaving for 35 years from the Middle East. She supposedly converted to Islam. She was never converted to Islam. She was always a Christian. She could never exercise her faith or express her views to her children for 35 years. You think about that. This is immense. When I rescued my mother in 1994, it took her 2 months to believe that I really left the faith of Islam, for her to confess that she was a Christian all along. She was secretly baptized in the YMCA swimming pool in Jerusalem. Her case is out of many, many cases. The movie Not Without My Daughter is another prime example to show this case. As a matter of fact, one time there was an honor killing in our village in Bethlehem. My colleagues went and watched it. I didn't go and watch it. They described the horror. The entire community were called in to witness the cleansing of the honor of the family. And the daughter was taken to a staircase in front of the house like a sheep. And she was decapitated with a kitchen knife. And even they were giving the description in the school, the decapitation, the details, and the gory details. It was horrific. Of course, the Israeli government arrested the man. This was in Aida camp in Bethlehem. When they arrested the man, the entire community raised a fund to bail him out. This is from my own experience. We've seen these things. It is a reality of killing women for basically leaving the faith or basically marrying out of the faith, so on and so forth.
Western civilization doesn't understand the persecution that's going on here, I guess.
These kind of things are not expressed in the West, in the United States. The persecution of Christians is very rarely expressed anywhere, so long especially if it's a Christian. So we have an epidemic in the Middle East. Honor killing is the highest form of murder that exists in the Muslim countries. It's the highest form of murder. Most murders happen as a result of honor killing from conversion or going out with somebody who is not Muslim or marrying somebody out of their religion. In Islam, it's very clear, thou shalt not kill. Westerners don't see the continuation of the statement, thou shalt not kill a Muslim. That's why they don't understand, you know, Islam prohibits murder, of course, so long it's not a Muslim. If a Muslim kills a non-Muslim, the punishment is not death. They don't get the death penalty, even though Islam requires the death penalty for murder. Yet when somebody kills or murders a non-Muslim, the death penalty does not apply in this case. It's simply a ticket or jail sentence. We've had a case in Indonesia where a man decapitated three Christian girls. You know, he got 20-year prison term, never the death penalty. So we have these cases all over the Muslim world. It takes a library to fill these cases. This is the kind of a system that's been imported from the Middle East and now is prevalent amongst our country and court system and so on and so forth, of total denial and looking the other way. No Islamic organization have supported that girl. Not a single Muslim organization anywhere in America supports this girl and her plight to life. And she makes a very good case. She says to the media, they do not understand. They do not understand. Indeed, the West does not understand. It is a shame, and I'm appalled. Even Fox News did not fully cover this situation. They gave it lip service. Just as before, when the major news media gave lip service to Bridges TV and the decapitation of the wife of the guy who ran Bridges TV, we're giving very little media coverage. I thank God for the Savage Nation for allowing this voice to come out, for allowing us who left the religion of Islam to have a voice to speak out and tell the world the true realities of what happens to women and converts from the religion of Islam. This is an immense subject. A huge amount of women, you know, are being persecuted here in the West for the conversion from a religion, yet we are not really caring much about them. This is, to me, a sad case of our situation here in America, in which we are all afraid of Islamophobia.
Well, Waleed, thanks for getting the story out, and thanks again for being with us on the Savage Nation.
I am delighted to be on your show, and I thank God for you.
This is the Savage Nation. I am syndicated by an independent syndicator who is not in any sense a major corporation. Maybe he will be one day, maybe he knows them. But you see, Limbaugh and Beck are part of corporate talk. And whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter whether the corporate talk is left or right. There is a club. And corporate talk only talks about others within the corporate talk fraternity. And so although Michael Savage has been actually banned in Britain, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of McCarthyism in this period, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of such things, that didn't matter to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. What's important is what might happen to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, not what actually did happen to Michael Savage. And that's the beauty of it. The beauty is that they can get away with it because the people themselves don't even see the hypocrisy. And now you understand what corporate broadcasting is as opposed to independent broadcasting.
Savage.